The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. Perhaps no other technology has raised as many hopes and sounded as many alarms as artificial intelligence. On November 30th, DeepMind announced that it has cracked a complex problem that has perplexed scientists for 50 years. With its AI program, AlphaFold, the research lab showed it can predict how proteins fold in 3D shapes, a wickedly complex problem that is fundamental to understanding not only the machinery of life, but also those of its diseases. In other words, the timeline to understand and treat many diseases is now vastly accelerated. Without question, AI will have consequences for humanity in the near future. In predicting those consequences, scientists, policymakers, and ethicists have raised essential questions about the risks these systems involve and what to do about them. These risks, often voiced as concerns, are in some ways similar to concerns raised about other groundbreaking technologies. Take, for example, the respected Swiss scientist Konrad Gessner, who arguably was the first to raise the alarms about the impact of information overload. In his groundbreaking book, he described how confusing and harmful to the mind and psyche the seemingly unmanageable deluge of data and information would be. He was not a Luddite, but then again, he lived in the 16th century and the technology he was targeting was the printing press. Some concerns will turn out to be patently wrong, such as those about the printing press. Some will be broadly correct and moderately relevant. For example, the fear that TV would hurt the radio industry. Some will be broadly correct and deeply relevant. For example, the fear that robots will take over many jobs and render some occupations obsolete. So what is to be done about these risks? How do we view ethics in light of decisions that would be made by us in programming AI or that AI will make in the course of performing its functions?
Carl Gomberg works as a policy advisor at the Internet Society, where he focuses on governance issues. He is also a PhD candidate at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies, IHEID, in Geneva. Carl studies the emergence of AI governance systems and its surrounding politics. His research is focused on understanding the fundamentals. What exactly constitutes governance rules for AI? Why and how do they emerge? Welcome, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to our chat.
So you have argued that an AI's governance is premised on an understanding of AI as the creation of artificial agents. What do you mean?
Well, I think it comes back a little bit to thinking through what is artificial intelligence, because a couple of years ago, it started emerging in many of the policy discussions about the governance of artificial intelligence. And we've seen it not only in the sort of policy space, also in the business space, of course, people promoting artificial intelligence as the big new thing. And I think if you think about artificial intelligence from a business perspective or from a sci-fi perspective, it's a useful term because it kind of helps us dream a little bit about, you know, bestowing machines with intelligence and have them behave like humans and do things that we as humans do. But it's not necessarily a helpful term when we're thinking about control systems of those things that we call artificial intelligence. So the idea is a little bit to go back to how a computer scientist looks at these programs, namely as intelligent agents or artificial agents, and to start from that premise rather than being focused on the sort of intelligence aspect of it, because intelligence is something that, you know, once we've seen a thing do a thing, it becomes uninteresting and we don't call it artificial intelligence anymore.
So then what are the fundamental properties of an artificial agent?
So one way to think about it is, so I was really inspired when I was looking into this to go back to how a computer scientist would look at this problem and what do they tell you in grad school when you're doing artificial intelligence. So sort of starting from the textbooks approach. And there's a really very seminal textbook by Stuart Russell and Peter Norvig that describes how one of the sort of fundamental design approaches to creating these artificial agents is to think about it from the view of a task environment. So any artificial agent will have a input side, what they call the percepts, into the system. It will have some type of performance measure that you're trying to optimize in the system. It will have some type of actuators or some action part of the system. And then it will also have an environment. So those are all sort of lenses that you need to consider when you're designing a system, thinking through which environment is it acting in, what are you trying to have the agent achieve, what should it do, and what information can it perceive from its environment. And those, that angle is quite helpful to think about it as constituting fundamental properties of any artificial agent, right? Like this notion of having an input side, having a performance measure, having an action side, and a given environment. It's applicable for all systems that we all call sort of artificial intelligence today. So you can think about it as these fundamental properties that if you change something along, for example, the line of the actuators, you fundamentally change the nature of the agent. So for instance, if you take a autonomous vehicle and you allow it to having it be in charge of the accelerator, suddenly you've added a degree of autonomy that fundamentally changes the nature of that agent from being something that could only steer to now also being able to regulate speed, for example.
Cool. And of course, I have a mad grin whenever you say, if you take a computer scientist perspective, because I do, being a computer scientist and having studied AI aspects in grad school, of course, that was a while ago. So my notion of fundamental text is only slightly different. And I'm gonna resist the effort to pull my master's thesis off the table over there and start shaking it around. But definitely interesting to look at AI step back from the intelligence aspect, as you say, that everyone gets all kinds of excited about, and focus instead on, you know, what are the actual how can we decompose this into objective aspects that we can then talk about.
Yeah, and it comes a little bit to also, I mean, with that kind of high level definition of an artificial agent and outlining it according to those properties I described, it encompasses a lot of systems that I don't think we would call necessarily artificial intelligence. You know, it would encompass a thermostat, for example, which is not seen as a big governance challenge, namely necessarily. But that's sort of where the second piece of my argument comes in, that not all of the systems that are autonomous are necessarily governance challenges. It depends a little bit on what type of impact they have in the world, whether or not they should be subject to governance or not.
Mm. So let's follow up on that governance angle. What do you mean when we talk about AI governance? Is it related to what you were talking about, which is the fundamental properties of an artificial agent? For example, are they about rules that define, constrain, or shape the performance measure in some way, or is it really more than that?
It's slightly more than that. So the reasons to start with that notion of artificial agents is that it helps us understand what is the thing that is subject to governance. So we're breaking that, or we're nuancing that thing a little bit more by saying that that thing that we're calling artificial intelligence is actually an artificial agent. And you can understand that artificial agent along these four dimensions, if you will. So we know what the sort of object or subject, the subject of the governance is when we conceptualize the agent in that fashion. And that helps us think through a little bit. So, okay, if we want that thing to behave in a certain fashion, we can have rules that impact one of the four dimensions. And that takes us a little bit to thinking about what governance is, which is another important piece in this discussion, because, and I'm sure that your listeners are quite aware of this, but obviously governance is more than just rules set by governments. Governance is a much broader concept that I define in this paper as those intersubjectively recognized constraints that shape and shape constraints and other aspects, or shape rules and expectations, basically. And important in that definition is that, of course, it doesn't have to be authored by a public authority like a government. It could be private authorities that govern or that author these rules. But the idea of defining AI governance as these intersubjective rules that have a bearing on these fundamental properties helps us distill and identify which rules are actually relevant for artificial intelligence. So you can sort of backtrack and see, okay, this particular governance rules, whether it's a norm or whether it's a piece of regulation or legislation or just a standard, if it has a bearing on one of those four dimensions of the agent, we can call it a governance of artificial intelligence.
When doesn't that make it very difficult, for example, in terms of one of the four performance measures, environment? I can understand some of the other ones, you know, what is the good behavior for the agent or the sensors, but in terms of the environment, it could really vary. So let's say the environment could be predicted by, could be impacted by what the artificial agent does, or maybe the environment is known. Some environments are entirely known. Some environments are not known. So let's say take the car. It may know the road that it's on and the destination it's going, but it will not know what will happen, you know, at the next intersection, for example. So doesn't that make it very difficult for AI governance, or does it not matter?
I think it matters. So again, I think it's helpful to think about them as lenses and just recognizing that the environment is one angle to govern the artificial agent. So if you think about it in the terms of an autonomous vehicle, for example, you can designate certain roads or certain zones where a road can, or where a vehicle can drive with a certain degree of automation. Mm-hmm. And you might acknowledge that certain pieces of road. So let's say that you're driving on the highway, it might be fully you know, acceptable to have a high degree of automation because it's a relatively predictable environment if you compare it to the city center where there's people walking around, there's bicycles and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Or so, dirt roads.
Yeah, so exactly. So like if you think about the governance rule as sort of being dependent on which environment in which the agent is acting, you can see that it either requires a governance rule to prescribe you to only act in a certain environment, or a governance rule might be needed because of the nature of that environment. So for instance, you might need a governance rule of having a human in control when you're driving in a city environment, because of the sort of highly or slightly more unpredictable environment that the city center constitutes versus the highway.
You said earlier that it's not clear that these rules would be these governance rules would necessarily be applicable to something like a thermostat. And yet, if we look at sort of the space of IoT security and sort of grasping at straws, I'm looking at your list of properties of the artificial agent and thinking, you know, that's not a bad decomposition of what we would look at for IoT management as well. So I guess one, thoughts on that, and two, sort of what makes the leap from just management and of devices to management and governance of AI?
So I would say two things on that. So one of the things that is helpful with conceptualizing AI in this fashion of artificial agents, but also the governance of it, is that you discover rules in the past that we wouldn't have called AI governance rules, but they are effectively rules that govern agents. So you can study a much broader set of issues once you understand that an IoT device would be captured, and we can learn something about the governance of an IoT device if we want to think about AI governance. Now, what I meant with governance might not be needed for all applications that we denote as AI is more that there might be governance involved in any type of artifact that we produce, whether, you know, you're creating a standard for an IoT device, for example, but I meant more in sort of, let's say, greater social ethical issues that provokes governance. So you could take the example of a recommender algorithm for your Netflix. It's fine if that gets it wrong, and that environment is not a sensitive environment that sort of provokes public discussions and calls for governance mechanisms. But the same recommender system might be applied for, you know, a similar technology might be applied for ranking something else, right? Like it might be to predict the likelihood of creating crimes or identifying people right on other bases, right? So it all depends on that contextual setting as to whether or not it provokes and demands governance. And that's where I start talking about understanding that governance challenge as artificial agency.
So what a lot of this stuff sounds like programming the algorithms, so that you can decide how the AI agent behaves. At what point do you delineate just plain programming versus something that is really governance? And also, what's ethics? right? What is ethical in the case of an autonomous vehicle? If it's bound to have an accident, it's going to have to make a decision, and that decision will have to be pre-programmed in its algorithm somehow. So you could call that ethics in some ways, you could call that governance, or just plain programming. What are the delineations?
So actually, I think that a lot of the governance rules might actually not be prescriptive in terms of prescribing specific lines of code or prohibiting certain lines of code. So if you think about a governance rule or a norm, a global norm, like the one that is emerging now about the use of autonomous weapon systems, so-called killer robots, right? There, we're only talking about certain performance measures not being perceived as legitimate, that you're not really allowed to designate a robot to try to, you know, optimize a success metric that is premised on killing people. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't really say anything else about the coding or programming of that system, as long as that is not the system's goal. So you can think about the governance rules having, they're sort of operating at different levels and different level of specificity. And if we think about that and we move that to, for example, autonomous vehicles, and we've been discussing this before about performance measures that might be relevant for autonomous vehicles, where you might actually want to go in and be more prescriptive in terms of what is allowed in the actual coding of that program. So for instance, this German ethics report that came out of their Ministry of Transportation that identified that certain parameters such as age and gender and so forth shouldn't be a factor when you're making a sort of critical decision, kind of the trolley problem situation. They should not be incorporated in such a decision. So at that level, if you compare that to the killer robot situation, in the killer robot situation, you haven't really sort of prohibited anything in terms of the programming or the lines of codes. But when you go to that German example about autonomous vehicles, then you're suddenly saying that certain parameters is not allowed to actually be present in the code at certain points in time. For example, if it is to make a decision that is of ethical significance, of such as the trolley problem situation. So I think they can operate at different degrees or different levels. There's different types of rules, and some of them might be impacting the actual programming. But I think a lot of them is more operating at sort of higher levels in terms of norms and what can the system's sort of ultimate design be put against.
So in the German example, just to be clear, this is an autonomous vehicle that is bound to have an accident, right? So the ethics ruling, the German ethics ruling was that if it's bound to have an accident and someone is going to die or some people are going to die, it cannot make the decision as to how it will steer, therefore, who's going to die based on gender and age, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that has been a very prominent example or prominent discussion, I would say, in the space of autonomous vehicles, these sort of ethical dilemmas that can emerge. And, you know, the most famous one is this trolley problem. But there's different variations of it. But basically, you're faced with a choice of killing X number of people or people of these characteristics, like a child, or killing some other group of people. And you have to make a decision, or the car needs to make a decision. So those kind of ethical dilemmas is what they're talking about in that scenario. And what they're saying is that in such dilemmas, you shouldn't factor in personal features like age, gender, or other aspects like mental constitution, I think they mentioned as well.
And is the concern really, well, I guess I can see the concern being either that you shouldn't say it's okay to kill old people, or, you know, what's that driving game, bonus points for baby prams? Just kidding.
Right.
But so you shouldn't make an assumption that you should aim to preserve young life, in part because programs shouldn't do that. But I could imagine as well that it would be a very short step to go from pretty clear delineations like, you know, octogenarians versus babies to far less clear distinctions. You know, don't drive over somebody who's wearing, I don't know, your sports club jacket, whatever, you know, don't don't build racist cars.
Right. I mean, what's interesting with all of these reports that are emerging that are describing such situation and that is recommending, for example, that such features shouldn't be included, they do not provide you with a solution, right? They're not saying what it should be. Now, there has been sort of attempts at trying to resolve it. So there was another report by the European Commission earlier this year in the fall that they were basically trying to describe that when vehicles are out on the road, what you could factor in terms of a risk management is to identify that certain participants on the road might be more vulnerable than others. They might be in a higher degree of risks than other on the road. So for example, a cyclist might be subject to more harm per hour spent on the road than someone in a car. And then what they were describing was that such factors could be included in the general driving of the vehicle so that, for example, the autonomous vehicle recognizes a cyclist and it knows that cyclists are more vulnerable than that other car, so I'm going to pay a little bit of extra attention and keep my distance a little bit better towards this one. Now, what they're then saying in these sort of ethical dilemma situations is that they do not prescribe a particular solution. Rather than what they're saying is that the solution kind of should organically emerge based on that risk management profile of considering certain road participants being more vulnerable than others. So it doesn't, again, it doesn't give you like a clear prescription of what the solution is in each ethical dilemma. It more takes a point of, you know, factoring in these risk management profiles and then letting the system emerge organically, and then we can assess it over time. Because it's very hard to prescribe these events in advance.
Right, in the abstract. Like
they're low probability events as well.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that there hasn't been a lot of time since the ruling, so it's not like there's a lot of evidence to discuss, because my natural next question would be, how well does this work and what do auto manufacturers actually think of it? But I mean, it sounds like it's far too early days to have a sense of that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be a manufacturer of these systems, because it must be super confusing, because you're getting these guidelines reports coming out and you're not sure the sort of, you know, obviously they might not be legally binding, but they might be informing legal decisions in the future. So how do you relate to them? And in some instances, there might even be sort of conflicts across the ethical guidelines.
You know,
some of them advocating for a more utilitarian approach, some of them do not, and so forth. And it might differ across jurisdictions as well. But I mean, it's an interesting sort of thought problem, this whole ethical dilemma situations, even if they are low probability events. So you can imagine also that, you know, something that if you were to try to hard code a decision in such an ethical dilemma, that's quite a significant change for how we think about accidents today, because today we evaluate what happened after the fact, right? Like, was this a good decision or wasn't it a good decision? And it's up to the courts to do that in every, you know, individual scenario and make a decision of what could have been a sort of inappropriate behavior, I think is the bar rather. So it's kind of like these ex post evaluations, but here you need to prescribe it ex ante. And that creates a whole new set of issues. Like, how do you articulate and how do you figure out and how do you arrive at the conclusion of what the prescriptive rule should be?
I mean, it even sort of undermines the whole word accident, right? I mean, the whole premise of an accident is that there was not necessarily something random happened and there was not necessarily fault, you know, deer dumps in front of your car.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know, the mind does sort of boggle in an environment where manufacturers sometimes struggle with, you know, even simple actuators on accelerator pedals, and it takes, right, you know, five to 10 actual accidents before they can determine that there was fault in the manufacturing process. I think that tracking down whether or not manufacturers complied with these regulations after the fact is going to be brutally difficult too.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be at a level of investigation of plane crashes, right? Like figuring out what actually happened in the system, because you can also imagine that, you know, we tend to talk about an autonomous vehicle as a agent, but it's actually constituted by multiple agents, right? Like it's a multi-agent system where you have that sort of global control by some kind of steering agent, but then you have sub-agents that might be dealing with the image processing or interpreting the signals from the LiDAR and, you know, passing it up to the decision-making system and figuring out what happened where and what might have been at fault. I can only imagine that it's going to cause some really deep investigations going forward.
So in your research, what have you come to as a conclusion about how to address governance of these AI systems, given the fact that you have now broken down their properties into these attributes? What is there a framework that you suggest that should be used?
Yeah, so hopefully breaking it down into these fundamental properties is the beginning of a framework for thinking through the various governance rules that might be applicable to specific applications that we call AI, right? So I think it's helpful, or it's unhelpful in a way, to talk about it as AI governance, because what we're really interested in is governance in specific domains, like autonomous vehicles, right? Like, or machine learning used in medical devices. They're all.
So you're saying AI governance as a term is just way too vague, way too broad.
I mean, it's vague, first of all, and that's why I'm sort of opting from moving away from describing it as intelligence and rather talking about artificial agents. So I do think that there is commonalities in terms of thinking about governance of artificial agents, especially if you think about the challenges that they can produce. So what I talk about in my research is that a common denominator around the systems that we are concerned about is that they have some degree of agency, or at least what we in social science would call agency. And that doesn't imply that they are sentient and have their own will. It's just that they're sort of their own explanatory variable in the social ordering of things. And you cannot necessarily directly attribute it to a human agent shaping that outcome, right? And I think that that is something that is applicable to all of these, that they have their own explanatory role in terms of being autonomous systems. And also, of course, the shared features, when you look through the lens of these four properties, is something that would be applicable to a medical device as well as a autonomous vehicle. So the lens in itself, you can use whatever the specific domain is. Now, whether or not we should be concerned about governance in one of those domains, I think is more up to the social challenges that we see emerge from that agency, right? So if we are concerned about vehicles being delegated decision-making in the road, yes, then we should definitely make sure that we think through how we govern that decision-making. But, you know, if we have those recommender systems online in Netflix, we don't really care. It's just a helpful feature for us, and there's no need for us to think through governance mechanisms to deal with that autonomous systems.
Could we get it wrong? I mean, we talked earlier about, you know, people having concerns, and yet they didn't turn out to be right. So there were concerns that were patently wrong. There were concerns that were very broad, but, you know, just slightly relevant. If we operate from the fact that we have concerns, now we create these governance rules, could we be creating the completely wrong governance rules?
Yes, I think that there is a risk for that. And I hope that by using a framework like the one that I'm working on, when you think through these properties, you can also discover existing rules that are out there that have a bearing and an impact on the system. So I use one of the examples there, something like the technical specification do not track that you have on the web, which is basically just a way for you to indicate to a server whether or not you want to be tracked or not. Now, that has an impact on that input side of the system. So that's a type of a governance mechanism that is already out there and has a bearing on artificial intelligence systems. Now, you know, people that are familiar with do not track might say that actually is not so widely in use, so it doesn't have an effect, but it's a description of a type of rule that already exists out there that might have been created for a different purpose, but that is still applicable to governing these systems. So it's helpful, I think, to start by looking at these different applications that emerge and do an analysis of what are the existing rules that have a bearing on this particular application and where are the gaps? Because it's the gap that are interesting. We shouldn't reinvent the wheel if we already have rules that the manufacturer or the deployer is already taking into consideration. Because if we start adding rules to existing rules, we're just confusing people and we risk reducing the efficiency of the governance effectively.
So it sounds like you're trying to sort of tease apart both meta and focus agency. The meta agency, as you said, if you have a car and you're delegating responsibilities of operating the car to a collection of autonomous agents, then there need to be some meta levels of governance there to sort of describe the activity of car driving in a population. And then separately from that, when you drill down to the level of individual components and you know, look at them in terms of the four lenses as you've described them, the four properties, then there are potentially other governance things to look at there, and we can particularly borrow from existing practice for those. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think also important to remember is that in many of the domains where we see these systems emerge, we already have established institutions and governance mechanisms that are applicable. So if you take medical devices, for example, that is already subject to approval by the FDA, for example. And what they're dealing with at the moment is figuring out, you know, what are the added challenges that you have to consider when dealing with machine learning, for example. And those conversations can sort of happen within those more narrow communities that already have a good understanding of the existing governance system, if you will, within the FDA and everything that surrounds it. And you're sort of discussing the added complexities that might come into play when you're using technologies like machine learning. So we shouldn't have to try to resolve everything at that meta level. We should recognize that there is already institutions and practices in place, and what we're adding into them is in some instances a little bit more complexity and a few novel challenges, but there is a lot of mechanisms already in place to deal with those novel challenges.
That's great. And in some way we've explored how very complex and broad this whole space is. And yet you're saying, but here's a way to look at it. And, you know, we can make sense of this. That's great. Well, that's been a really fun episode, a good discussion. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.